today by your radios. You are tuned to 96.3 FM. And this is Robert Norse, Bathroom Spear Robert, as I'm sometimes called. 2.5 hours of civil rights talk, and hopefully something will spur you to action around rights for poor people, rights for ordinary citizens, particularly around police misconduct, and the rights of all of us as murder from the air happens in Yugoslavia in our name. Bathroom Spears Broadsides, in case you want to call in and join the merriment or the solemnities, depending on how you want to look at it, give a call to 427-3772. This is a twice-weekly show. We air at Sundays at 11 and on Thursdays at 6 in the evening. We do 2 hours on Thursdays and we do 2.5 hours tonight, or today, I should say, until 1:30. And we really do invite you to call in. We think that your calls are really important because, hey, I'm a pretty regular voice on the air, but perhaps you haven't spoken recently or not as much as you should have. And the whole point of free radio micro-broadcasting power community radio, or pirate radio as it's sometimes known, is to let people who don't get a chance to speak, who aren't in the inner power structure, who don't have usual opportunities in terms of the establishment media, to get their word out and for us to talk to each other about issues we need to talk to each other about. Like the bombing of Yugoslavia, that is now, what, its 46th day, I believe. Maybe it's the 47th, I'm not sure. Like the fast of Lou Rice in front of the post office. I think he's in his 24th day seeking better services at the Homeless Service Center, as he puts it, edible food in appropriate quantities, a drinking fountain, adequate shelter, or more shelter than exists at least in terms of more than the 28 spaces that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program has at the moment for 500 to 1,500 homeless people. And these seem relatively minor things to look for in a program with a budget of over $1 million a year. These are minor things with the board of directors stacked with powerful and influential people like Donna Murillo and Linda Steinau, downtown merchant association types who should be able to put this together pretty quickly. If you have a chance, go by the post office and talk to Lou. He's the fellow with the kind of reddish hair and beard, sits on the steps of the post office, hard to miss, next to often his blue backpack. Generally been left alone by the police. In fact, Lou wanted me to say he was kind of upset when I mentioned that the police had hassled him. That was my interpretation, I want to point out, not his. He is a southern gentleman of the first water and wouldn't want to criticize the police department. I have no problem criticizing the police department, at least in this. And he feels he's been treated properly by the police department, though I think telling someone to move and not to sleep at night is completely improper, even if it's, quote, legal, unquote. And that apparently is what they did to Lou. They said he couldn't stay there if he intended to go to sleep. But Lou wanted me to make clear he does not regard that as harassment, that he feels he wants to maintain good relations with the police department, and he's concerned about focusing on his own struggle to establish decent homeless services. He has 7 points. I mentioned 3 of them, and in the course of the show, I'm going to mention the rest of them. I understand Catherine Byers, the mayor, and also on the board of directors of this homeless services center, has been down to see him. And she spoke to me a couple of days back and said, as I think I mentioned on the Thursday show, that she was looking into getting a drinking fountain set up, getting a nutrition expert over there to look at the meals. And again, I think those were the 2 things she mentioned she was going to do. And when I talked to Lou, I think he was appreciative of that, but I think he wanted them to show him what was really happening. I think they have a water jug or something from a sort of a camper's supply shop that is in there now, and they're looking to put in a drinking fountain. When I talked to Mike Bustos, who's currently in charge of the Homeless Services Center until the new director comes in, if he accepts the post, in a couple of weeks, and that apparently is still up in the air, he said that they were going to put in a porcelain fountain under the pressure of the fast from Lou, but they were afraid that that might be, if it broke, it would create harsh edges, so they're looking now for a metal fountain. Meanwhile, Lou is, if you ever tried going for a few days without food, you know how it feels. Try to imagine going for 24 days without food. He has been drinking coffee and water and a few liquids, but he's getting thinner and he's getting more weary, and that is something I saw yesterday. So do encourage him. I'm really in a difficult position here because I don't know whether to encourage Lou to seek what I think are really very small changes. I think that if you're going to risk your life, I would like to see someone go for larger changes. But Lou, this is his fast, and he's doing what he thinks is right, and he is having an impact. City council members have come down to speak to him, and Byers says that she's doing something about this. We have an incoming call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Yeah, you might want to tell him that drinking coffee stimulates insulin production, so it'll make him get sick quicker from lack of nutrition, lack of calories.
That's a very good point. I always had a suspicion that coffee was not the best for you on these.
Yeah, I'm hypoglycemic, and caffeine stimulates insulin production. It causes you to digest stuff quicker, causes you to burn calories quicker.
Now, are you in the downtown area yourself?
Yeah, actually, I'm a programmer on Free Radio. I'm a new one. I'm Puck. I have a show on Saturday nights.
Go Puck.
Yeah.
Puck, maybe you could stop by the post office and actually be very specific and tell him the information that you have in order to, you know, advise him. He's a very strong-minded person, and I think, you know, has his own rather personal standards as to how to proceed, but I think it would, you know, not be unwelcome for you to give your support and offer your suggestions.
Yeah, I was planning on doing a little interview with him, like, probably later tonight.
That would be great.
Yeah, I'll play on my show next week. Another thing I was going to say about that thing is that they already have a dietitian who deals with the homeless shelter. That's part of where their money goes to. If you look to the apportionment funds, like where all the funds go at the end of each year, they like have this little thing where they say where the budget's going.
Hmm.
If you look like way in the back of it, it's like you can get to it at City Hall. You can get to it at the Hall of Records. If you do look for it, they have a dietitian. They're just not using it. They're serving hot dogs when they know there's no dietary, there's no nutritional value. They serve just crap. I used to go there myself. So, and then I stopped going because of how bad the treatment was.
And can you talk a little bit about that? I know Lou can't because he's weak and he is at his post in front of the post office. But what have you got to say about that part?
The conditions over there?
Yeah, can you be specific about, for
example? Well, it's just dirty. They treat you bad. They herd you around like a bunch of animals. They force you to, like, basically wait around and then come running when the food's comes, sort of like pigs, you know, suey, suey, and they throw out the food. Sort of the equivalent of that. There is, the drinking water is, yeah, it's in a big tub, like you were talking about, like a camper tub,
mm-hmm.
But the thing is that it sits there, and sits there, and sits there, and water gets septic pretty quickly when it's in large amounts like that in the hot, you know, in an insulated hot area,
mm-hmm.
And it just gets more and more rancid tasting towards the end of the day. People hang around there all the time, but, you know, they're not doing anything. I also want to say that the homeless community can do something to improve their conditions, too. A lot of times around the shelter, you don't see them trying to clean things up, trying to get things nicer and stuff. But as far as, like, the food stuff goes, yeah, they do have a dietitian, and literally, it was Beanie Weenies most of the time that I ever went.
Beanie Weenies?
Yeah, it was, like, those red beans, I don't remember what they're called, and little pieces of hot dog.
Beans and Franks, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
How long did you use the services for, Puck?
I was homeless for 2 years here in Santa Cruz, and I left for about half a year, and then I came back, and now I'm home, and I have a job and everything. But,
they helped you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. What are you complaining about?
No, they didn't. The drop-in center did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's who I usually throw my support to whenever, like, there's somebody to throw their support to, is they actually get shit done over there. They're actually informing people, keeping information going, and they don't judge people. They treat people like human beings, where at the resource center, everybody's always sort of looking down on you. You know, it's really hard to get medical care. You've got to, like, go there between certain hours and say these specific things to these specific people. You get the runaround just to get some Tylenol, just to get some, like, painkillers.
And you contrast this with
the drop-in center where every other Thursday, at least they used to back in my day, I don't know if they still do this now, every other Thursday they have a nurse come in, distribute antibiotic creams, like ointments for cuts and stuff so that people get staph infections. They distribute like painkillers, toothbrushes, toothpaste. You don't get any of that at the Homeless Resource Center without going through a huge runaround. You have to go back to MLI and then go to the Homeless Resource Center, then back to MLI and so forth. They just give you a huge runaround. It's to get all those tax dollars distributed nice and even, I guess.
Well, how would you recommend that we have this so-called shakeup in the management of the Homeless Resources Center, or the Homeless Services Center now.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Gillette is out, and somebody else is in, unless, of course, Karen Gillette changes her mind again and comes back. What's needed out there, Park?
What's needed is just more organization and working with the homeless people as if they're part of it, as opposed to being a problem to being solved. Two sets of, like, individuals were cooperating towards one common goal, as opposed to a problem and then the solver of the problem. I think the cooperation and basically putting people down on the same level. Get the homeless people, the whole crew over there, all together with the people who run the place and say, what does everyone need? You know, go at it from a cooperative standpoint, as opposed to, you know, the homeless people are a problem that must be solved. They're people. I mean, I was homeless for a good long while down here, and I know you. You know my face, Robert. I know you.
Oh, okay. Your voice doesn't ring a bell, but...
I'm usually a little bit more quiet when I'm in actions, when I'm involved in actions. But I used to work with Feed the People, on the, doing, like, whenever they used to do their benefits over at the vets hall and stuff like that. I used to work with them,
mm-hmm.
and I was vaguely involved with the sleeping, the camping band sleep mm-hmm. out over on the front steps of the city hall.
Oh, yes, Dan Hopkins and Sean Alini.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, too long ago.
Yeah.
Of course, we have the new...
Well, it never seemed really effective. I always thought that people should sleep on the mall where all the tourists can see, and that would get their attention.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I've been hoping to start such a protest for the last 2 months, and maybe it just means we just have to go out there with sleeping bags and start sleeping.
Possibly. You attract a lot of attention by doing stuff like that. Problem is that if you only get a few people to do it at a time, you'll get arrested a few people at a time.
That's true.
If you get a lot of people to do it at one time, if they arrest all of you, then they're just...
Well,
it's fuel in the fire.
What they do usually then is they ignore you, like they did with the IWW convention back in 1994, which actually held its had its nighttime sleep. They slept outside, 70 to 90 strong.
Yeah.
And then the next night, when the group had dwindled to 10 or 15, they came in and arrested people.
Yeah, that's sort of like what's happened to a lot of actions I've been at. Well, and at the protest, no cops are doing anything, but when you're walking away, then you get accosted. Yeah, it's basically the same thing. Anyway, I gotta get going because I gotta get to work, but I just wanted to call in and give my input. I'm probably gonna go over and give the fasting guy an interview later tonight so I can play some of his stuff on the air next week.
When will your show be?
7 to 9 on Saturdays, called Revolution of the Mind.
Well, let's hope he is still there 7 to 9 on Saturdays when you do your show, Puck.
Well, hopefully. He'll be there tonight when I want to interview him, though. I'm sure of that.
I assume so.
He should be all right. It's actually when fasting, this is from somebody who's heavily involved in, heavily into mysticism and stuff. Fasting, the first 3 days are really hard, but once you get past that point, it's really odd. You sort of hit this, you just don't feel hungry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You get weaker and weaker, you just don't feel hungry anymore.
That's a comfort, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Comfort to those of us who, particularly those of us who are watching rather than experiencing it.
Yeah, well, I can understand what he's going for, though, and I can understand why he's doing this. I mean, I've been over there. I stopped going over there whenever I was homeless. I would not go to that feeding. I would not go to the shelter to get anything because I just didn't want to deal with those people. All of the county-run programs, like that, over the, all the homeless stuff that they have offered out of Emmeline, like food stamps and resources like that, and the medical resources that they have over there, they've got to make you run through the runaround. One time I was sick, I had to go to Emmeline. It was horrible. I was coughing up blood and stuff. And I got the runaround until I was no longer sick anymore. I didn't need to see the doctor by the time they would let me see a doctor.
They realized you were malingering, you see.
Yes. Possibly.
I have heard... No, not at all. But I think that the reality is, you know, this increasing crackdown, this sort of wholly bureaucrat, social worker, social service provider notion, and also it seems to be a kind of a... But at least under Karen Gillette, there was a lot of cronyism going on out there.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I mean, I think it's good that issues are being aired. And I suppose homelessness is coming up. This Chris Crone's Homelessness Commission is now on the shitty council agenda for Tuesday. Of course, we know what happened to the Sleeping Ban Commission, and we've heard about the Crone Crapper Commission. Now we've got the Sleeping Ban Task Force, I guess it is.
Yeah.
I don't mean the Sleeping Ban, I mean the Homelessness
Task Force.
Right,
doing anything.
Or the Task Force.
Yeah, I remember that show where you said that.
Yep.
Are you going to that city council meeting?
You know, I probably will. I usually do, unless I find...
You going to record it?
...something better to do, and I usually try to record it, although my tapes of city council meetings have not been very good of late. I'd like to apologize to you and other people listening. Often what you can do, those of you who are listening, is if you can't get to the council meeting, the tapes are in the library, usually 3 or 4 days later. The library is open even on Sunday from 12 to 5, I believe.
Yeah.
Now they've expanded their hours to their credit. So yeah, I'll probably be there, and I encourage people to, well, you know, it's hard for me to encourage people to come to these kinds of city council meetings, but I, if you've got something specific to say like you do about experiences you've had,
yeah,
the thing to do is to demand immediate action. Don't sit around and say, this is they're going to talk for 6 months. That's their plan.
They're going to talk until people forget about this and even an issue at all, and they won't have to do anything about it.
That's the fear a lot of us have, but certainly I don't see any actions on the front burner. If you read the SCAN newsletter that Chris Crone writes, the lead story in SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, is the organization, for those who don't know, that elected the current city council, all, not all seven, but six of the seven of them, and endorsed them, and actually endorsed ending the sleeping ban,
yeah,
and then turned around and essentially had little to say other than, oh, we kind of wish you were doing more for the homeless when, you know, the city council sold everybody out on the sleeping van.
Mm-hmm.
Crone's comments around this are really kind of, he talks about his issue is, we won, so what do we do now? That's the lead story. And it says, he talks about what a wonderful thing, it's a stunning community-backed election victory. Now we really have a majority on the city council, a truly progressive agenda. He has all this feel-good talk, which really, it's kind of makes you cock one eye and get skeptical just to read it. But if you've been with as many meetings with Chris Crone as I have, you know that something has happened to him. Maybe he was there all along and I didn't see it, but he's enjoying this kind of sensation of power. He likes to hold court. He repeats the same verbal phrases again and again about community consensus, and when the people lead, the leaders will follow, and he's rolling in rhetoric.
Yeah.
But the specifics that he is pushing for just don't seem to be there now. I mean, something as elementary as the right to sleep was something Crone could not effectively get behind in any way to mobilize community opinion. He was not willing to stand up before the Downtown Association, the Downtown Neighbors, the Harvey West Association, and say, folks, the time has come to restore human rights on this issue in Santa Cruz. We're here to get your opinion, but I'll tell you my opinion right now. This is my opinion on the subject. People have got to have a place to sleep somewhere legally.
Yeah,
can't arrest them. Yeah, that's it.
And I mean, that's just the end of it.
And though Crone did eventually come down and, he pressed for a resolution in city council, he supported a couple of Sugar's resolutions. The two of them, Sugar and Crone, never took the lead.
Hey, Roberts.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you this, but I got to go to work.
I'm sorry to hold you up.
And all right. I'll be listening while I'm walking over there, so go ahead and say anything else you need to say to me.
Hey, thanks for calling.
All right. Yeah, see you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, quickly, somebody else call up so I can stop babbling, for heaven's sake. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The lines are open. It's 427-3772 for those of you who want to call in. And that includes Councilmember Christopher Crone. Indeed, he is actually the only council member, I think Fitzmaurice may have called in once, but I think he's virtually the only council member who's called in to this show. And he did so in a couple of shows, and then he stopped calling in. And indeed, the city council has been running around, quote, very busy, unquote, going to meetings. You saw them at the town hall on Tuesday, and then they had some sort of budget issue discussion on Thursday that I wasn't at, but I'm hoping to get a report on. I know Linda LeMaster, an activist with Housing Now in Santa Cruz, and Scott Graham, a Beach Flats activist, were keeping an eye on that. I think Graham was the only one to actually go to that Thursday city council meeting. As I was saying, we have lots of talk from Crone and the other council members and very little action. There has been action. The first thing they did, and a very good thing they did, was to rescind the previous council's giveaway of the disputed the beach boardwalk property that the Canfield Company was grabbing. But now, as you know, or those of you may know who are listening to the show, there's a plan afoot to do another bulldozing of the beach flats. The Dolphin Lee project, two sets of apartment buildings currently filled with low-income Hispanic people, that apparently is the staff of and some city council members want to bulldoze for a new Mercy Housing project that will eventually be owned by Mercy Housing, not even by the residents or by the city. It'll be owned by essentially an adjunct of the Catholic Church, which is neither here nor there to me particularly, but I'd like to see Habitat for Humanity or other groups get in there. That would also build on undeveloped property or property where there isn't such a dense concentration of housing that's currently being used, incidentally, by the people who came down in such large numbers last fall to oppose the Beach Flats bulldozing, the Canfield Company conniving, the Seaside sellout, as we were calling it back then, and as even these current city council members that were elected, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, seem to be saying. I actually have a bit of tape on that, if I can find it, of course. I think this is it here, from the Tuesday town hall meeting, where Norma Tasker talks about the issue, and she's a beach area working group person and a real estate agent, and then I speak about it, in large part reading a speech from Jane Baer, who is a longtime resident and activist in that community, as well as an anti-war activist. And I think you'll find this interesting. Let me know what you think of this tape. I'm at 427-3772.
My name is Norma Tasker, and I am here on two different items. I would like 2 minutes on each. They are separate items. One is for a group. Right now, I'm here as a realtor, and I wanted to offer my professional and experienced opinion on some of the items that we've talked about this evening. One is the beach plats. Everybody wants something done with the beach plats. I was concerned because I had heard by rumor about there may be another great big Mercy housing project going up. And that was a concern of mine because I was raised in Hyde's Point projects and I lived in Army Street projects. And I saw them deteriorate. They went through new housing and they deteriorated because you put too many people on the same low economic level in one place. So I think that you can improve the city by building, you do need affordable housing, you do need to build some larger units. A suggestion I have, rather than condemning and going through the condemnation and payoff of a lot of people that do not want to sell. There are people for sale, projects for sale now, not projects, I shouldn't say it that way. There's properties for sale now. There's 30 units on Riverside and another 15 or 20, let's see, I have it here. And these have been for sale for 6 months. They are slumlords that are running these. Lee Brandt, 124, 126 Lee Brandt, 204 Riverside, 129 Raymond. Anyway, they would like to sell. The city can go in there and purchase these. There's good possibilities there. They're on 18,000 to 20,000 square feet. Purchase those and enlarge them. Maybe take the 30 units to 50 or 60 units. Do it that way. Put some money there. And also, the other way that you can have affordable housing and spread it out is allowing brand units on larger lots, maybe 6,500, 7,500 square foot lots, have brand units. You can support that by redirecting the redevelopment agency. They're planning on giving $8 billion to, I don't know whether it's North Bay Ford or some car sales that's only going to be there for 8 years and they don't own the property. They want to help them. And they're always giving money to Canfield or wanting to give money to Canfield. So I would ask Teal Cirillo and the redevelopment agency to look at the needs of the people. The redevelopment charter calls that the redevelopment funds are for all the public, the general public, not just for special interest. How we could help also what's going on, there is some nice condominium projects where the city did lend $20,000 on second loans. And those monies, when I went to take one of my buyers to go for the money, they were all used up because they were used for the new condominium developments. Save some of these monies, $20,000, $40,000, $50,000 loans, for the homeowners to add a brand unit so they can add income. And then maybe you have maybe one more car on the street instead of all the different cars that you have over here on Sycamore Avenue. I managed for a big company here on the Sycamore Avenue. Our little 5 units couldn't park because there were too many people in Sycamore Commons. Neary Lagoon and Sycamore Commons, you see what has happened in those new places. They're just filled with crime. And so don't build projects that are real projects. Build projects as developments, you know, 30, 50, 60 units. Let's see, keep the scale a Santa Cruz scale. Already our buildings are getting too high. Put a cap on the limits. You've got 4 stories now. I hate to see it. I think there's a 7-story planning to go up somewhere. So anyway, I don't know. I just heard these things, so I'm just concerned that Santa Cruz stay a community. Now, my second...
Your time is up.
That's fine.
Stay over.
Okay, I do have NOLA group. I would like to speak on the second group. I am the coordinator of the NOLA 2 group, and this is a completely separate issue. I want to tell you what we are doing as a neighborhood, as a group, to improve our neighborhood. And I would offer these suggestions to other neighborhoods. Luana and I, Haley and I, myself and Joe and Paul started this because we wanted to improve our neighborhood. We live in Lower Ocean. We saw what's happened to Beach Flats, people trying to take it over. We don't want that to happen to our neighborhood. So we are gathering up all the neighbors that were prominent in the NOLA, the original NOLA that Eric Larson was working with, and we've invited Eric and many other that people were there, Scott Kennedy, to work with us. And it's come together much better than I thought. We now have had our third general meeting. We are inviting you to our next general meeting. All the council and anyone else that would like to join us is May 12th at the Resource Center. And we have the Vecinos Committee coming there. and to evaluate us. They were very pleased with the proposal that we have and what we plan to do there. We are applying to them for some funds.
I do really need to ask you to pass.
Okay.
Okay. Next speaker. If we have time at the end of the 2 minutes, we'll come back and let you go around.
All right.
That's a lot of people left to speak.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course, Catherine never has time. I've seen this happen time and time again in one oral communication session after another public hearing. Buyers cut speaking to 2 minutes, and then essentially, after disrupting people's speeches, because it's difficult to present significant matters in 2 minutes, she says, in essence, we'll come back to you. It's a sort of reassuring granny manner that really covers a very superficial concern as expressed in action for a real democratic process. And I think we saw that when she began to threaten arrests of people. She threatened to arrest me a couple months ago back at the hearing on the sleeping ban, again because Tim Fitzmaurice was upset that some people were hissing when certain people were giving bigoted speeches that were essentially dismissing homeless people as criminal and child molesters, or talking about this as being some sort of problem or legitimate concern. Not that a person can't say that in a public forum, but I think an equally valid response is to respond with disbelief, skepticism, horror, and censure to that. And if Fitzmaurice somehow thinks that everyone has to sit on their hands and tape their lips shut while other people speak, I'm afraid that he's not talking about democratic process at all, really, as far as I'm concerned. But it's particularly notable that, or you might say, he's talking about a formalistic kind of process when what really happens is people's rights don't get protected, don't get reestablished. Instead, you have a process by which you have the appearance of democracy without the substance. And Byers has proceeded along those lines. Continuing, we're listening to the City Council Forum last Tuesday on issues of importance to the city. Again, it was mostly a venting session. People can talk all they want to the City Council. It seems it doesn't do much good. Even those who voted for them, those who worked actively to elect them, are now faced with what appears to be a double cross on the Dolphin Lee project. And that is to say, the project of bulldozing the beach flats, not going after Canfield's housing, leaving the road open for the 3rd Street realignment. A whole bunch of concerns that we thought had been resolved at election time, but apparently have not been. So we need to see action from the City Council, not just talk. We have seen inaction. We see sleep continues to be criminalized. We see no new bathrooms. We don't see a drinking fountain out at the Homeless Services Center yet, even though a man is starving to death in order to get one. We've got, we got the promise of the mayor that that'll go in there. And I'm not going to make a big issue of it, because as I've said, I think these are trivial matters, really, and not trivial, that they are comparatively, it's not fair to call them trivial, but they're only the beginning. And I have such frustration about the inaction of the City Council around basic homeless services and their support for 8 years of a regime that really treated homeless people very, very badly on the whole, and essentially tried to stymie homeless activism, that I really have a hard time getting it together. But I will get it together, and you'll hear me speaking about Beach Flats. I'm the next speaker here. But if you can be the next speaker if you want, give a call to 427-3772.
Can I just ask a question, Norma? What time is the meeting?
It's at 7:15.
7:15, May 12th,
Wednesday,
at the Resource Center.
And again, an interruption. May 12th, 7:15, at the Resource Center for Nonviolence is again where the, lower beach area, lower ocean area is going to be discussed, and how to make sure that what happened in the beach flats doesn't happen there. I don't know how inviting Scott Kennedy is going to be helpful to that. Apparently Norma believes that to be the case, and I have some confidence in her. I have problems with a number of these high-profile figures who, in my mind, not only sold out the beach flats, but wanted to make sure the beach flats stayed sold out by supporting candidates who would have rubber-stamped Canfield's redevelopment projects and made homeless hundreds of Hispanic people. I'm talking Larson and Kennedy and Daryl Darling and a bunch of other folks who are Linda Steinau, essentially right-wingers masquerading as progressives in this town. And you have to be progressive to get elected or to get any political support, so that's what they do. There also is another meeting, by the way, on May 12th, and that, of course, is a forum of the Yugoslav issues about the... I guess we have three people at that forum. Sorry about that. Norman Solomon, Bill Monag, and Konstantin Dinopoulos. That's Wednesday, May 12th at 6:15. So have a listen to the forum down at 846 Front Street at the Vets Hall. Then hustle on down to the Resource Center for Nonviolence. I think it's 515 Broadway. And if you want to support the residents who want to make sure that we don't have a Canfield organization moving into the lower ocean area to make sure that there is real housing developed instead of some sort of bogus gentrification commercialization project. A little more now from the City Council's Town Hall Forum.
Councilmembers and
of this hotel?
I'm sorry?
Just go ahead.
Thanks. Some Beach Flats residents were unable to finish their remarks. Some couldn't stay to give them. Some are concerned that the Dolphin Lee project is being placed where 200 to 300 people are on the ouster list. And if this project was not a ready deal, as apparently Councilmember Fitzmaurice believes, why then did SCAN endorse it by name weeks ago? I also note that SCAN, the group that endorsed every single council member on this council and 3 years running endorsed ending the sleeping ban, couldn't seem to get it together to censure five of the seven council members who voted to keep it criminal for homeless people to sleep at night and to keep it a $54 crime. Beach Flats residents and homeowners never requested additional housing projects. There is no need to move out present residents who do not want to move, force owners to sell who do not want to, or demolish houses, including single-family historic homes. Beach Flats residents and homeowners have not requested a mercy project and do not want to be displaced. Beach Flats is a neighborhood that was destabilized by its recent battle against the boardwalk expansion and would like to be left alone for a while. If there is a housing problem, it is at the boardwalk buys homes and empties them and demolishes them in a transparent long-term plan to make the whole area commercial. If the city wanted to help poor folks, they would make it clear that the boardwalk cannot intrude into the residential neighborhood by trying to buy and rehab or build and rehab the about 20 homes that could be gained in that manner. If that were tried first and there were still proposals for housing that might be proposed for the large vacant lots on residential land near the boardwalk. The use of eminent domain on the boardwalk is not discussed, yet the boardwalk is the only speculator in the neighborhood. The proposals that Mercy has floated so far have not addressed the basic problem of speculation by the boardwalk, but they would diminish the security and stabilization of the residents and other owners of residential property except the boardwalk, markedly reducing the ability of the residential component to hold its own against the commercial component. Either Mercy was not directed to help the residential component, or it is not the type of organization set up to help the residential side of the planning of the given components. That being the case, please do not accept the descriptions designed to justify their funding. And finally, I find it highly cynical that the Dolphin Lee Project moves to empty the very people who supported and came here with signature after signature asking they not be displaced, the activists who stopped the Third Street expansion. And I encourage you, and I encourage the community to make you look at that fact. Thank you.
Wyatt Taylor. You can't move that train without moving my body.
mom and daddy and apple pie. I did everything my country said was right. That's when I still believe, like many friends who were easy, so young and naive, when we got the call to fight. You can't move that train, you can't move that train, you can't move that train without moving my body. You can't move that train, you can't move that train, you can't move that train without moving my body. I was the all-American kid, but all the right things that I did couldn't have prepared me for Vietnam. That's when I began to doubt and question what the war was all about. Counting bodies in the burned-out villages we bombed. You can move that train, you can't move that train, you can't move that train without moving my body. You can't move that train, no, you can't move that train, you can't move that train without moving my body. Down in Nicaragua and the El Salvador, rain down once more to kill and maim. But this time I say no, this time I just have to go to try to stop the train to carry murder in my name. And you can't move that train, you can't move that train, you can't move that train without moving my body.
You can't move that train. Mark Levy, Heroes, Sheroes, 1989 album, getting more pertinent as more and more bombs fall on Yugoslavia. And they can't drop the missiles anymore, I guess, or the missiles are getting more expensive and they're exhausting their stockpiles, so they're dropping these vicious cluster bombs that float down on little white parachutes and then explode in marketplaces and hospitals and Chinese embassies. I guess they hit the embassy with missiles. That's why we're having our cappuccino, folks. That's why we're having our Mother's Day celebrations out there. That's what's going on. The screams of the wounded and the dying, the drone and wail of the air raid siren, something we're not familiar with, and that I can only attempt to dramatize because I haven't been under those conditions. But to listen to people who have called people over there who have is quite an experience. Anyway, getting back to Lou Rice, the 51-year-old man and client of the Homeless Services Center at 115 Coral Street, who began a hunger strike on April 15th for better conditions for the Santa Cruz homeless population. He presented the following 7 points. One, he wanted better nutrition at the free meal, the twice daily feeding of homeless people. Currently the food is of poor nutritional quality and insufficient supply. The free meal should adopt the same high standards of St. Francis Soup Kitchen and the noon meal they provide, where food is plentiful, tasty, and nutritious. Two, cleanliness and hygiene on the food production at the free meal. Powdered milk is mixed with water in the mop bucket sink in the morning, and other unacceptable shortcuts are used in preparing food. Three, a drinking fountain for clients. Currently, if a client is thirsty, they must drink out of the sink in the bathroom or the mop bucket sink. Apparently now they have some little camper's barrel they're using. Four, thanks to Lou Rice, 28 spaces are insufficient in the ISSP program each night. The ISSP summer program needs to be increased. Santa Cruz's homeless population being 500 to 1,500 in the city alone, no one has a legal place to sleep at night except those in the ISSP program. And that's, what, less than, what, 2%? 3%? Staff members regularly treat clients with disrespect, make frivolous charges, and put out clients for insufficient reasons. A fair grievance process involving client representation needs to be instituted. Staff members need to be identified by a badge or some other designation. 6. Donations of food and clothing are not adequately reaching the intended recipients due to inadequate control by the HSC administration. Better oversight is necessary to amend this problem. 7. The HSC has no homeless representation on the board of directors. Now, this actually isn't true, but I guess the question is, does it have sufficient homeless representation? We just got a call, and indeed, there has always been a token homeless person on the board. But let me continue reading this anyway. Clients from different populations need to have a voice in the operation of the Homeless Services Center, disabled, minority, Spanish-speaking, female, etc. Mr. Rice says he will discontinue his FAST when the first 4 issues have been addressed, though he urges that all of these concerns be reviewed and redressed. For more information, contact Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423 Huff or Woman of Steel at cruzio.com, WMNOFSTL at cruzio.com. So this is what Mr. Rice is doing on the steps of the post office today. He is trying to awaken the conscience of the community and of the board members who run the show. And for me, that's a real tall order, at least getting the board members off their butts. I've seen these men and women for some time, and as I said, my general perspective on the Homelessness Service Center is somewhat more pessimistic and cynical than Lou. And it takes an optimist to undertake a hunger fast, I'll tell you. You have to believe what you're doing to risk your life and your health, particularly for what are really very mild demands. As far as I'm concerned, is, you know, the Lou Rice is worth more than these demands, but Lou feels otherwise, and he's doing this. So go talk to him on the steps of the post office. Offer him your support, your advice, and offer to contact members of the Homeless Services Center and the City Council and anyone else you think would be effective in instituting these changes quickly while we still have Lou Rice with us. If you want to call in and talk about this issue, our phone lines are open. It's 427-3772. 427-3772. I also would like to correct a statement I made that you heard me give a recorded version of at the town hall meeting last Tuesday. I said that SCAN had endorsed by name the Dolphin Lee Project. This is not true. It mentioned it favorably. It acted like it had a privileged position, but it put it into a housing committee for further examination. It was the only project specifically mentioned in this way, and it seemed to have a special privileged status. That's really what I should have said.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I have a question. Why has this issue with Mr. Rice not been addressed on the local, any local media except for Free Radio?
Well, it has shown up in the Metro, actually. It's shown up in 2 issues of the Metro, but the only reason that happened, I believe, was because Metro writer Kelly Luker happened to be doing a kind of an expose on the Homeless Services Center. You may have read it a couple of weeks back.
I didn't.
There was a long article. Usually the Metro has no interest in homeless issues other than to sneer at homeless people, has been my general experience. For example, they had nothing to say about the sleeping ban when it was the major issue on the city council agenda, and all the other media was giving it at least a little bit of coverage. And the answer is, I think, that the media is not interested in this issue. It's not a sexy issue. It's not a colorful issue. It's not one that any politician is taking forward, perhaps with the exception recently of Keith Sugar, council member who brought it up on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. But it's a man's life. It helps. I can't understand why the Sentinel or you know, a local newspaper would have some.
I share your dismay on it. The Sentinel, I can give you some of my thoughts on the subject. I can't say, you know, because I don't know what's inside the minds of these people. But you're dealing with individuals who are essentially don't have too much, who believe that charities are taking care of the homeless situation, that we don't want to give too much publicity to the homeless either because that's going to alienate people from contributing to homeless people. That's what you hear from some social service providers. All these activists asking for more rights, that's just going to make people more hostile to homeless people, which I think is a ridiculous argument. Or alternately, we don't want to encourage homeless people to come to town to take advantage of our, quote, wonderful social services. But, you know, I think the bottom line is I just don't think people who are in these media particularly give a shit.
Yeah.
I really don't. And if they do, their editors don't. That's the problem. They may want to write a story, and they may start to write a story, but it gets slashed and reduced. But that doesn't mean that we can't have some impact on that process.
Yeah, I'm fairly ignorant in this issue. That's why I'm asking. And I'd like to involve myself somehow.
Sure.
I really don't know any outlets for that.
Well, I have a couple suggestions. You, of course, could talk to Lou down at the court. He is getting weaker, and he has a very specific focus. I guess you've been listening to the radio show? The points I just read. You can contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work with. We, of course, have been putting a lot of energy into issues like the sleeping ban, which we still think is really a major civil liberties issue for homeless people. And there's a teach out on campus on the sleeping ban starting on the 19th up at UCSC campus. On the 20th, on my Thursday show, I'm going to be having a kind of a mini debate with Councilmember Mike Rotkin, who is the leader of the Bad Boys on the sleeping ban. And on the 20th, I believe there's 21st, I'm sorry, the next day, on Friday, there's going to be a sleep out on campus by the students against the sleeping ban. And then the next week, on the 27th, Rotkin will have a full two-hour debate with me on the issue of the sleeping ban and possibly some other issues too, because homelessness is, again, it's an issue that Rotkin finesses all the time. You're probably not familiar with the city council. He's been in power for 20 years on and off, and his support was cut back at the last election, we had thought, but they still couldn't get it together to simply make it legal for homeless people to sleep somewhere in Santa Cruz, due in no small part to his influence. There's also a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. Yeah, and you asked me, so I'm going to throw all this stuff at you. Sure. Tuesday, there's a city council meeting at 7 o'clock. There's also an earlier one at 3, but I'd suggest the one at 7, where there will be a proposed commission on homelessness, a homeless task force, which to my mind is bullshit, and it's just, you know, it's another...
A commission on homelessness?
A task force on homelessness.
Okay.
It's another way of spending another 6 months doing nothing, in my view. But, you know, I suppose there are some who believe it could be turned in other directions. If I think the way to turn things in other directions is to go for specific proposals, like immediately opening up shelter, immediately making reforms. You don't talk about them for another 6 months, but go for them. You know, open up 24-hour bathrooms downtown now. Don't sit around. Do it. They have the majority. They have their 4 votes, but they aren't doing it. So, but anyway, Chris Crone is the council member behind this, and this will be on the agenda at 7 o'clock down at City Council Chambers, which is right across from the main library at 809 Center Street. And you can check that out. You can also get involved by calling the City Council and talking to Crone or Sugar, the council members. And the number to call there is 420-50... Now, is it 2-0 or 3-0? It's one of the two. I'm going to ask my producer to call in to give me the exact...
Would it be listed in the phone book?
It will probably be listed in the new phone book. They changed the numbers in January. They had a whole new system put in at the city council.
It's good to keep people confused.
Well, I think they... They have confused us a lot. I don't think it's intentional. But I think then the other thing you can do is you can keep an eye on police misconduct. And to me, we need to organize on the streets. We need to organize, and I think the biggest issue, and of course this is an issue that isn't the homeless issue, it has to do with the bombing of Yugoslavia. There's going to be a lot of people coming out around that issue. But I think there's opportunity to organize for homeless people on the streets. We were tabling 2 weeks ago against the sleeping ban. And we we lost our main tabler, so the kind of the project has become somewhat disorganized, and we haven't been doing it for the last week. But if you're interested in helping to table, or if anybody out there is, in helping to mobilize people not to sign a petition, not to walk to city council and sit through another endless series of meetings that go nowhere, but to actually start doing some civil protest downtown, where we have pickets in front of stores that are anti-homeless stores that support these anti-homeless laws, where we start doing theatrical events that encourage tourists to restore human rights and encourage our local residents to restore human rights, which embarrass the business community into really taking a second look at its get-out-of-town policies, or its benign neglect policies, if you want.
Right.
Then I think that's the way I want to go. We used to have a lot of homeless people behind that until Karen Gillette's Homeless Service Center essentially co-opted a lot of that feeling, and they had a kind of a containment center out in the outskirts of town where people, you know, at least they were safe, sort of, for a while if they didn't offend the gang out there and get kicked out. But, you know, I'm thinking that if, you know, Lou's protest, though, it's not as thoroughgoing as I wish it were. I mean, it doesn't go to a lot of other civil liberties issues, but he's taking a very specific, strong, principled stand around a very few reasonable issues, as I think you said when you called in.
Yeah.
And I think that could be the beginning of something here, although I'm also afraid that it puts the city council in a position where they can just sort of meet those demands quickly and then shut them up.
And that's why I don't understand why it hasn't been addressed, so...
They have so, well, I don't know, except I can say they may have so little regard or believe he has so little power that there's no need to do it. It's just like, he's invisible, you know, it's like homeless people are invisible. There's no need to pay any attention to them. You just ignore them. And that, I think, is really the key thing. They are less than human, you know. I mean, it's not like you have a contempt or disgust for them. You just screen them out of your awareness.
Oh, goodness.
Are you homeless yourself?
I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank everything that all my coincidences that have helped me through so many things for that.
So, well, I'm glad.
I really pray for a lot of people that haven't had the opportunity that I've had. So.
Well, thank you for your call.
And thank you for all the information.
Thank you.
Playing. So... Let's see.
What's the other getting work of any kind? Finding a job. Any kind of a job. Anything. Better for the TV doing nothing. Better for scrounging for a living. If you can call it a living. Lady, please, give me a job.
And we're back on the air with, again, callers are our most important product. It's Uncle Bob. Hi, Bob.
Robert, how are you?
I'm good.
I was going to say that, in my opinion, what has been for over a decade and remains the biggest issue in Santa Cruz County is the public status of Arthur Danner III.
I wonder, can you link this up to how homeless people are treated or poor people are treated in any way, Bob? I know that...
Broad sense mm-hmm. way, there is a tendency towards appeasement, compromise, looking the other way, that happens by becoming established. And I don't think these things are bad per se, but when we look the other way at such an obvious... discrepancy as the Arthur Danner III public track record, we are in grave error, and it indicates, I think, how desperate this community is. It's been said in the past that someone like Arthur Danner III couldn't happen in too many other places. Santa Cruz has this pretense of being progressive.
Of course, for those who aren't familiar with the political scene, Arthur Danner III was our DA since 1978 and is now a local judge.
Absolutely, which is, as I have said before in your show, is a scandal in and of itself, that Arthur Danner would be a judge and there would be very little uproar, very minor comments were made. Here we have this guy with a documented track record of dastardly abuse of power. And the issue has been out publicly long enough where, in my opinion, there is no excuse for the political leadership to not take a public position on this issue.
Now, have you followed Danner's court career at all?
Mr. Danner is a probate judge, which, of course, fits so well, right? Where's the
now,
money?
What kind of a judge is he again?
Probate.
A probate judge.
Yeah.
And
of course, the DA, one of the functions of the DA's office is public administrator. Right, so when wills are contested or when competency is contested for an elderly person, the DA's office has a lot of sway as a public administrator. So where does Arthur Danner III go when he is finished being the DA of Santa Cruz County? He becomes probate judge.
Well,
this should be a public outrage.
Well, have you followed his behavior in any particular cases?
I've seen nothing come up that's of any significance. I mean, I'm not following the situation that closely from that perspective, Robert, but to me, the mere fact that this individual could be accepted in such a community as Santa Cruz as a judge with nearly a ripple of concern, I think is downright outrageous. And the documentation on the Danner DA office disaster is so thorough.
Well, let me give a number. Why don't you give a number where people can call if they need this in more detail, because I know that some people are interested in this. Others, of course, are familiar with it.
Abuse of power is the single most important issue of our time, okay? And if we don't find a way to deal with abuse of power diplomatically, politely, but very, very ardently, we are at a total loss. My number is 457-2670. I'm in the book, Bob LaMonica. Anybody wants to call me? And I can certainly provide some background data on some of the more highly documented abuse of power of allegations and misconduct allegations surrounding our Danner's past, which goes back to 1978, at least as to 1986. I'm sorry, at least as far as 86.
Well, Bob, let me ask you.
So we're talking over a decade of.